All right, welcome to Bright Videos News for Thursday, March 12th, 2026. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. And I want to describe some actual things that are happening in the world, apart from all of the psyops and propaganda that you're being subjected to. Most of you, if you're Americans or living in the Western world, your governments and your media are just pummeling you with lie after lie after lie. Like, you know, we're winning the war and Iran has run out of missiles and the Strait of Hormuz is going to be fine. Everything's good. And, you know, food prices are going down, etc. So let me tell you what's actually happening. Fertilizer costs, according to one farmer in America, and I'll show you his video, fertilizer costs are up 77%. He says that in the larger context of his interview. I'm going to play a short clip where he's talking about this. Those costs are going to go even higher, obviously, for as long as the Strait of Hormuz stays closed. Now, of course, I predicted all this, right? I mean, right away, I said, what? Stockpile fertilizer for food security, because it's, remember what I called it? White gold. Now it's already more expensive. It's going to get much higher. In addition, oil is now over $100 a barrel again, and it's going much higher. On top of that, this is breaking news. The Chinese government has just announced that it is banning all refined fuel exports immediately. That means no one in China will be allowed to export diesel, aviation fuel, gasoline, you know, kerosene, what any refined fuel products can no longer be exported from China. So right there, that's going to impact a lot of other Southeast Asian nations. And it means that China is realizing that energy is about to get very scarce globally because of the Strait of Hormuz, obviously, and because of the Trump and Netanyahu initiating this war against Iran. Interestingly, China is not nearly as dependent on oil from the Strait as most other countries, especially compared to Western Europe. China has solarized a lot of its energy infrastructure. China uses wind turbines. China uses hydropower. And they're building another giant hydropower project that will even dwarf the Three Gorges Dam, which itself dwarfed the Hoover Dam in the United States, which at the time was the largest infrastructure project in the world. China is decades ahead of the West when it comes to energy infrastructure, and they can read the writing on the wall, so they've banned all energy exports. This, again, this will have very severe implications. But let me play the video for you of the farmer with the fertilizer comments, so you can hear from him what's happening with fertilizer prices. I believe this video is recent, but let's take a look.
Fertilizer, those that need to buy are hurting pretty bad because we've had this huge jump in fertilizer prices because of this this conflict. And, you know, with only about 30% of fertilizer coming through the Strait of Hormuz, that's, if you divide that out per day, that's about 0.09% of the world's fertilizer coming through there. And even if the U.S. only uses 30% of that, which I think is probably a really high number, that's 0.03% and per day. So we've only been in conflict for nearly 12 days here, and our fertilizer costs have jumped nearly 77%, and our corn price has only gone up by 5%. So we've got some real challenges here ahead of us.
So there you go. He's now he mispronounces the Strait of Hormuz. I think he called it Hormuz or something, but he means Hormuz, obviously. And he's saying that fertilizer prices have gone up 77% or nearly 77%, but corn prices have only gone up 5%. In other words, he's saying that as a farmer, the cost of my inputs is rising dramatically, but the amount of money I get paid for my corn is not rising enough to compensate for the cost of the inputs. So what happens if you're a farmer in that situation? What happens? You use less fertilizer. And then that reduces crop yields. And that's why I predicted, you know, 2 days ago, I showed you the infographic, or at least it's on naturalnews.com. I explain that because of this, you're going to have crop yields falling all over the world. Anywhere from, let's say, 10 or 15% on the low end to 30%, maybe more on the higher end of that. And you might say, well, no, it's only going to be 20%. Okay, well, what happens if you take 20% of the food away from the world? You end up in a crisis. You end up in famine in certain areas. Maybe not everywhere, but you end up with food scarcity and food inflation, and ultimately a lot of people go hungry. And Michael Yan commented on that video, and he said, it's the Last Supper. And he's got a whole Substack article about that, because Michael Yan has been warning about famine, engineered famine, for a very long time. There's a meme about this. It says, for anyone confused by the math, there is a 0% chance that Trump has any idea what to do next, and a 100% chance that we will pay for it. That sounds about right. So, of course, the smart people right now are, you know, stockpiling fertilizer, stockpiling food, preparing for food inflation and food scarcity and all these things. The oblivious people have no idea what's about to happen. And unfortunately, that's the vast majority of the people. So they're going to get hit hard. So overall, we are facing a very difficult couple of years ahead. And that's if things start to calm down right now, which they will not, probably. Because Israel, in particular, is determined to sacrifice America, if necessary, to try to destroy Iran. So all the things that we've talked about over the years about preparedness and resilience and self-reliance and even maybe getting out of the cities, if you can, all these things are going to become extremely, well, critical for your survival, probably, as things get difficult. Food prices are going to go up. Energy prices are going to go up. There's going to be a lot of increased desperation among the American people. There will be the oblivious class of Americans who will think that we're winning the war because that's all they're told. They will think everything's great, and they won't understand why they can't afford to eat or pay the rent or buy insurance, etc. They won't understand what's happening. It's like, Trump tells me everything's great, but I can't afford anything and I'm homeless and they're going to repossess my car, you know? There's going to be that disconnect. And that will drive a lot of desperation and anxiety across the population. It's a psychological operation, you know? And some people will become unglued as a result. So this is going to be a time to double down on all the things that you already know and the preparations you've already made, the knowledge you already have. And of course, you're going to have to be adaptive to rapidly changing circumstances, because we don't know how this war is going to go. Trump may initiate a military draft. He may commit us to 5 years of war in the Middle East. I mean, another Vietnam. Maybe more than 5 years. That could happen. We could lose hundreds of thousands of Americans fighting Iran. Remember that when the U.S. actually launched the Iraq-Iran war back in the 1980s, I believe, the U.S., the CIA controlled and provided weapons, even chemical weapons, to Iraq. And in that conflict, which was, again, West versus Persia, basically, the Iranians lost, I think, around 300,000 people. 300,000 deaths. That's because of America. And they have not forgotten that. They are willing to make sacrifices to protect their existence. America, on the other hand, has very little tolerance for sacrifices of life at that scale. And that's why your government is going to terrorize you in order to try to convince you that we have to go to war, to try to get your support for a war that has been planned and engineered for years in advance. This has all been scripted. And remember, the single most important thing that you can do is to never trust what the government's telling you. Oh, and also, I'm just realizing that I did not play the special report of stockpiling fertilizer yesterday, but I did post an article about that at Natural News yesterday. But I'll play that report for you today, even though I actually recorded it 2 days ago. So I'll play that report today. Plus, I've got a couple other analysis reports of what's happening in the war situation. And then I have an interview, part one, with Mitch Vexler, who's an expert in property taxes and bonds and government fraud and, you know, Ponzi schemes of how the pensions are funded by laundering money through the bond system. Yeah, it's it goes deep. He's from Mockingbird Properties. I've interviewed him once before, but he's got new information to share with us. So we will cover that here today. That's coming up. So we'll jump into some of those reports here. Just want to remind you that we've got survival supplies for you. HealthRangerStore.com/survival. So shop there if you want to get some extra food while we have supplies before prices go through the roof. You know, with fertilizer going up, you know that even our input prices, our the farmers that we work with, the co-ops, the suppliers, it's all going to go up. Especially, you know, 6 months later, the next harvest season. Man, our food bucket prices are going to go much higher. I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that, but we have food that is available now that we bought just recently at essentially last year's prices. So you want to get last year's prices on food that is premium, lab-tested, certified organic food packaged for long-term storage? You can get it from us right now, healthrangerstore.com. If you wait 6 months, it's going to be, you know, war prices, basically. We have no choice because that's what it's going to cost us. I don't even know. I don't know that we're going to be able to get everything that we can get right now. If the supply chains are fractured, which they will be, this is going to be a problem. So, I mean, it's, gosh, I hope we can continue to function, you know. Hope we can provide something by the end of this year. I just don't know if that's going to happen. Don't know. So anyway, we shall see. And also, I'm working on, remember yesterday I introduced a new avatar video with our avatar Jack Harlow. I'm working on another avatar. And do you recall that the first book I created at our book engine, brightlearn.ai, it was a book called Awaken Your Inner Middle Finger by author Fu Koff. You know, we were just having fun with it. And, you know, the power of saying no, which it's the most important skill you can have today right now, especially with government and the draft and everything. Well, I've created an avatar, Mr. Fu Koff. He's a kung fu master. And if I can finish that in time, I'll insert that right here so you can see the special message from Mr. Fu Koff. He's a wise martial art expert. He has something important to say. If it's not today, then I'll show it to you tomorrow. In any case, here come the special reports and the interview with Mitch Vexler. So enjoy the rest of the show. Remember how I previously called fertilizer white gold? Because you could stockpile fertilizer. Just like you can stockpile gold or silver or food or water or other survival supplies. Well, now, in the aftermath of the war, well, the war is still going on in the Middle East, fertilizer supplies are about to become very scarce and very expensive. We're going to see a global reduction of fertilizer production somewhere between 30 and 40% for a number of reasons, but all having to do with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz and the destruction of infrastructure in the Middle East and other similar factors. So, fertilizer, if you've already stockpiled it, it's suddenly worth more. If you haven't stockpiled it, you have a short window of time to get more. And the best way to do this is to go to like an animal feed store or some kind of a rural country farming type shop they will sell fertilizer by the bag, typically, like 50-pound bags or 40-pound bags, what have you. Or you can buy in bulk. You could get fertilizer by the pallet, and, you know, you can have it delivered with a forklift or whatever. Whatever format works best for you. Now, just be careful with it. You know, fertilizer does contain components, let's say made with urea or ammonia, that in certain configurations could be used in certain formats to make explosives. So obviously I'm not recommending that. And you want to store it carefully, keep it dry, keep it cool, keep it in the dark, etc. It's not going to just spontaneously ignite, by the way, but I mean, you would actually have to try very hard to make it do anything other than be a fertilizer. But you may raise red flags among authorities if you are buying a lot of fertilizer all at once, or some of the raw materials, such as buckets of urea. You may want to limit your purchases of those things just because you don't want maybe Homeland Security knocking on your door like, why are you buying all this fertilizer? Your answer would be, well, because Health Ranger told me this is white gold. Well, yeah, Homeland Security probably, they don't care about that. It's like, you are fitting the pattern of somebody who's stockpiling, you know, explosives or something. So don't do that. And I'm only recommending fertilizer for food production. See, fertilizer is sort of stored food. It's the potential for food. And the more you stockpile, the more food you can grow, the more you can help neighbors and your community to grow food in the middle of a famine or a global fertilizer shortage like what we are experiencing or about to experience. So there are lots of rational reasons to stock up on various fertilizers. Well, which kind should you get? Well, it depends on what you want to grow. So, you know, use your favorite AI engine to answer that question and get your favorite mix of NPK, whatever. You're also going to need some trace minerals, and you're going to need, you know, magnesium and calcium and the trace minerals on top of that. So make sure you're doing all that if you want to grow your own food. I believe a day is coming soon when we will have robots that will be able to help us do local gardening. In fact, that is my number one use case for robots. I want robots that can pull weeds and grow food and harvest food. And so far, we don't have that. I don't even care about robots that will fold laundry or do the dishes. I want robots that will grow food, because at that point, we can semi-automate local, organic, homegrown food. We can be more self-reliant, more off-grid, and actually have more nutritious foods compared to what is typically available in the grocery stores. And when those robots become available, they will, of course, need fertilizer. And that fertilizer will last for decades, so there's no harm in stocking up now. And it's funny because I'm actually sitting on a few pallets of fertilizer from years ago that I'd purchased as part of preparedness. But these are very high in magnesium and calcium, so they're used for growing vegetables. But I've got a couple of pallets of that I haven't even tapped into yet. So I'm set, at least in the fertilizer category, but we don't have the robots, unfortunately. So we're still waiting on that. So along with all of this, it's a good idea to store seeds. And we've got the seed kits available at healthrangerstore.com. All kinds of seed varieties that you can either store those or you can start planting this year if you want to plant. We've got the courses at brightionuniversity.com, courses from Marjorie Wildcraft and others that you can purchase and download that teach you how to grow a lot of food in a very small space with the least amount of time. So that's available. And then you're going to want a home water source, either rainwater collection with a large tank or well water and a filtration system, because you don't want to be dependent on centralized water, because that's not reliable, just like you don't want to be dependent on centralized electricity or gasoline or anything else. If you can go more off-grid, do so. If you can grow some percentage of your own food and have your own water and have your own electricity, do all that. Do everything you can do to get off-grid. That's going to serve you well. That may be just getting a diesel generator right now, let's say, because, you know, the batteries aren't that great yet for off-grid power storage, but that's coming also. That's a problem that's about to be solved, just like the problem of not having robots. So it's going to get easier to live off-grid in the years ahead as there's new developments in solar panels, battery storage technology, robotics, local AI, etc. You'll want to take advantage of all of those, and I will keep you posted on all of those because this is an area where I have very high interest. This is also a lifestyle that I live. I'm always trying to get more off-grid, that is more self-reliant, and using today's best technology to help me achieve that. And I'm sharing with you the things that I find that will work. So I'm expecting a lot of breakthroughs over the next 2 years that will make off-grid living much easier to tap into for most people. And stocking fertilizer between now and then is a great idea. So you might as well get started. So just start today. Buy a 50-pound bag of fertilizer or whatever you can find. Have a place to put it. Keep it dry because it will attract water, by the way. It will attract moisture out of the air. So you want to keep it sealed and dry. And as the fertilizer situation gets worse because of the war in the Middle East, you're going to find that that investment has more and more value. And then as food yields, crop yields plummet, and that's coming also, and food prices go up, you're going to find that your fertilizer can be leveraged to amplify your own larger local food supply that will have even more value. So the fertilizer itself will have value, and that's a barter item, by the way. You can barter fertilizer just like you can barter ammo or silver or whatever. But imagine how much more it's going to be worth when you turn it into food, and then you can barter the food. How much will fresh tomatoes and zucchini be worth? You know, a lot in the middle of a famine, especially. Or what about okra? Okra has quite a bit of protein in it because of the seeds. So, and okra is super easy to grow, but it needs a lot of fertilizer. So it's going to be very valuable there. In the meantime, if you just want to buy storable food, we've got that too. But that's only a stopgap solution, really. Ultimately, you need to be able to grow your own food. But if you want storable food, shop with us, healthrangerstore.com/survival. We put together a collection for you there of our number 10 cans with freeze-dried fruits and vegetables that a lot of people are missing, by the way, from their stored food supplies. We've got the Ranger buckets, mini buckets, mega buckets, everything, nuts and seeds and quinoa, beans and legumes and oats and lots more. You can find all that at healthrangerstore.com/survival. So take advantage of that while we still have the supplies. Probably we're going to see a strong uptick in food sales because of the war and the, you know, the crop yields problem and the fertilizer shortages and the sulfuric acid shortage that affects fertilizer production and the natural gas infrastructure being damaged, etc., etc., right? But the thing is, you know, most people, they won't know what's coming because they're not really paying attention, and there's a lag time. So a lot of these effects that I'm mentioning won't kick in until later this year, but it's already going to happen because, you know, the oil and gas infrastructure has already been damaged or destroyed or severed, and the shipments have already halted. So even if they restart everything now, it's going to take a month or more to get things back online, and we're going to end up with more than a month of a gap in the system, probably multiple months of gaps, even if there's peace tomorrow. And I don't think there's going to be peace tomorrow, unfortunately. So anyway, get yourself prepared, healthrangerstore.com, and get fertilizer from a local feed store, and get seeds and, you know, your own water infrastructure, etc. And when you do all these things, you will be much better off than most people. And I think you will thank yourself for doing all these things. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. You can hear more of my podcasts and interviews at brightvideos.com. All right. Take care. So get ready for things to get even uglier. because, well, you know, the false flag is coming now. The U.S. is losing this war. Trump has failed. The U.S. military has failed. Iran remains in control of the Strait of Hormuz, which means that Iran has its grip over the Western world's economies. And if the Strait of Hormuz can't be opened within a few weeks, Western nations are going to collapse in terms of their currencies, their debt, their bonds, and their industries. And so Trump and the deep state and Israel, of course, they're all in desperation mode, which means they're willing to do anything at this point in order to try to, to get mainstream American support for a ground invasion of Iran. And so they've decided that they're going to carry out a false flag attack. And so you've seen the announcements all over, probably, that the FBI, which, of course, has a long history of plotting terror attacks all across America, that the FBI is warning that Iran may wage a drone attack on the people of California, as if somehow drones can reach all the way from Iran to California, which, of course, is completely insane. It's too far. Drones don't have that kind of range. But, hey, most of the American people don't know that. They're not well-informed. And so they'll believe anything. So what's about to be set up right now, and it might be in California or it might be somewhere else, is a Pearl Harbor-type event or a 9/11-type event domestically in the United States, but probably something much bigger, something that could kill more than just a few thousand Americans. It could be even a radiological attack, as I've warned about the potential of that before. The goal, of course, is to roll out this attack and then show all the people, you know, dead or bloodied or the terror. And, of course, pro-Israel Zionists now control the entire corporate media in the United States. So they'll run this over and over and over again, just like after 9/11. And they will terrorize the American people. First, they'll kill thousands of people, and then they will terrorize the American people through news broadcasts. And then Trump will say, we have to do something about this. We have to stop Iran, no matter what the cost. And then he'll initiate the draft, the military draft. Draft a million young Americans, maybe more. And then we will wage an invasion of Iran a few months down the road. Maybe 6 months, who knows, whatever the case is, maybe a year. And that's how this is shaping up. It's the ultimate final battle between the West, or let's say the Epstein Empire, which is Israel and the United States, and the UK, obviously, the Epstein Empires, versus the civilized world. The civilized world would actually be Iran. You know, it would be the BRICS nations, Russia and China, for example. Countries that aren't trying to provoke wars. They're actually trying to defend themselves against the provocations of the Epstein Empire, which is typically, you know, U.S. bombings or Israeli bombings, etc. So that's what's shaping up, the final showdown. And sadly, probably thousands of Americans will be targeted by our own government in order to create the false flag attack and the narrative to support this final showdown. Now, remember, in order to understand this, you have to understand the true history of false flags in America. Under Bill Clinton, there was the false flag attack of Oklahoma City. That was carried out by the FBI, by the government, to bomb their own building to try to blame, basically, Rush Limbaugh and AM talk radio. And they had, Timothy McVeigh as the scapegoat. And then there was 9/11. And that was a plot involving Israel and the CIA and the Bush administration, which, of course, had strong ties to the CIA. And the goal of that was to turn America into the weapon of war against all of the Arab nations, you know, specifically Iraq and Libya and Syria and Afghanistan, and then ultimately Iran. Remember, there were seven nations that were named back then as targets, but they needed a false flag operation that was psychologically terrifying to the American people. So they pulled off 9/11. and they killed over 3,000 Americans, and then that created something like 90% support for the so-called war on terror, as Bush used to say, which didn't even make any sense because you can't declare war on a method of warfare, you know, but it was used, again, it was used to justify, this is what Israel wanted, was the U.S. to attack its enemies in the Middle East, and that's exactly what happened. So now, history is repeating itself. We're going to have another false flag attack in the United States, and it will be used to psychologically terrorize the American people and get everybody to support the a major escalation of the war on Iran. Because, again, Trump is losing, the U.S. is losing this war, and if the U.S. walks away from Iran and just declares victory and sails away, then Israel is left hanging. And Israel would continue to get struck by missiles from Iran. So there's probably been a calculation made at the highest levels of the White House and the FBI, etc., that in their view, it's worth sacrificing a few thousand Americans in order to justify escalation of this war. And with that, there will be the invocation of the War Powers Act and the suspension of the Constitution and the suspension of elections. That's why Trump doesn't really care about what happens to his popularity ratings as they are plummeting. He doesn't really care because if there's no elections, it doesn't matter. Just pull a Zelensky, you know, just declare a war, declare the suspension of elections, declare the suspension of the freedom of the press, shut down all independent media as Zelensky did in Ukraine, and then just be the military dictator for a few years while you fight this war with Iran. And anybody who argues against you, you arrest them or assassinate them and lock them up or whatever. That's the way Zelensky has done it. And it looks like that's where it's going in the United States as well. So, folks, that's the plan. That's the plan. And it's so obvious that everybody on social media already sees it. And my hope is that this false flag won't work the same as the previous false flags, because back in 2001, during 9/11, we didn't have the independent media like we do today, obviously. We didn't have the decentralized knowledge platforms and all the different AI technology that we do today. So it's possible they will try to carry out a false flag, but they won't get away with it, and it won't have the impact that they are planning on it having, that people won't be swayed to just join the war or support the war. And I also suspect there's going to be huge resistance against the draft, because young Americans don't want to go fight and bleed and die for Israel. That's for sure. The support for Israel among the younger Americans, those who would typically be drafted, is very close to zero. So what is it going to be? Boomers shouting for their grandchildren to go die for Israel? While the grandchildren are like, no way, I'm out of here, I'm leaving. Yeah, it's not going to go well. But that looks like the current plan. So, of course, we need to pray for peace. We need to pray for de-escalation. And really, all Iran is asking for, I mean, they've already laid out their terms, is, you know, number one, Netanyahu needs to be turned over to the ICC for criminal prosecution as a war crime, you know, a war criminal. And that makes sense. He is a war criminal, obviously. He's already been indicted, so turn him over. Secondly, Iran's right to possess nuclear weapons, which is a right that is granted to every nation under United Nations documents, charters, and agreements, etc. That right needs to be respected. And actually, that right begins with domestic nuclear power infrastructure. But, you know, hey, if Pakistan can have nuclear weapons and India can have nukes and North Korea can have nuclear weapons, why shouldn't Iran have nuclear weapons? It's obviously the only way to not get bombed. You know, it's the ultimate self-defense shield. And then thirdly, Iran is demanding, you know, compensation for all the damage that the West has caused by invoking this war of aggression against Iran. And if those requests are met, then Iran will declare peace and open up the Strait of Hormuz, and the world's economy can get back on track. And Iran would stop attacking Israel. But barring those things, Iran is just going to keep doing what it's doing now, and it holds all the cards right now. So that's why the United States and the deep state and the FBI, which, you know, only really works for the globalists, is plotting this false flag attack on U.S. soil. So the bottom line here, obviously, is that we need to pray for peace and we need to pray for de-escalation. Our country is run by absolute lunatics. And I want to show you a video of Lindsey Graham to kind of prove that point for you here. So Lindsey Graham is almost always drunk, and he's 100% of the time completely insane. But watch this video.
So I just want to say, I feel good about the Republican Party. I feel good about where we're going as a nation. We're killing all the right people, and we're cutting your taxes. Trump is my favorite president. We've run out of bombs. We didn't run out of bombs in World War II.
So there you go. That's Lindsey Graham speaking at the Republican Jewish Coalition, saying that he feels good about our nation, and he says that America is killing all the right people. What a noble thing to say, huh? And that Trump is his favorite president, and that we've run out of bombs. Okay. Too bad there's not a 25th Amendment for senators, too, you know. I guess there is some variation on that. But this guy's completely insane, and he wants to just keep killing people. And Trump is obviously going along with it. And Netanyahu, if he's still alive, is pulling the strings. He's the puppet master behind all these people. And no doubt they're willing to sacrifice the lives of thousands of Americans, if that's what it takes, to get widespread U.S. support for a much more aggressive war, even a ground invasion against Iran. But a ground invasion would be the ultimate trap, and that would see America lose the war. That's how America gets defeated, is if we go in with a ground invasion. Because Iran is a very large country. I don't know how many exact square kilometers it is, but it's massive. It's much larger than, you know, Iraq, obviously. It's a very large country. It's extremely mountainous, rugged terrain, with a dedicated population that have very strong domestic cohesion. They identify as Persians, a culture that goes back thousands of years and has seen incredible, you know, breakthroughs and innovation throughout world history. Many of the most important breakthroughs that we now experience in our lives, or that we have built upon, actually came out of Persia. They're not stupid people. They are brilliant, actually, and they are dedicated to their survival. So if Trump sends in ground troops, it will be the end of the American empire, I'm predicting, and that seems to be how this is going to go. But the bottom line for you and I in all of this is that we need to be prepared. We need to be prepared for a false flag attack. We need to be prepared for the psychological terrorism, so don't get swept up in it. Don't be manipulated, which is the whole plan. The media will try to terrorize you. And then also be prepared for a world war to commence, which means years of supply chain disruptions, years of hardship, years of food scarcity and fertilizer shortages. And we already have information about fertilizer prices going up 77% in the United States. I've got a video on that I'll play in a separate report. In addition, Iran insists that it has the right to nuclear weapons and that it's moving its strikes to a new mode called continuous strikes, which means the war is not going to end anytime soon, even though Trump has declared victory. So anyway, get prepared for some very difficult times. Get yourself some extra storable food, obviously. And you can get that storable food at my online store, healthrangerstore.com/survival. All lab-tested, certified organic, an excellent supply, super clean ingredients, long-term storage formats, including our number 10 cans and freeze-dried fruits and vegetables and more, and our Ranger buckets, etc. You'll find it all there at healthrangerstore.com/survival. But also grow your food, you know, grow some food, stockpile fertilizer for food security, and get your money out of the banking system. Get into gold and silver, get into off-grid sustainable systems, whether it's food, medicine, finance, you name it, energy, communications, all of it. You need resilience. You need to be able to survive very difficult times if it goes this way. And of course, I'll do my best to keep you posted so you can keep hearing my videos at brightvideos.com. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams. Be well. Take care. You know, at this point, Trump is living in a fairy tale land. Obviously, he just said that costs of food are down, and mortgage costs are down, and rent is down. Automobile costs are all down since he took office. But the American people who actually buy things and pay rent or pay mortgages or buy insurance or whatever, or fresh food, they know they're paying a lot more. And now Trump has declared that we've won the war with Iran. He said it 5 times in his speech. In fact, I'm going to play it for you so you don't think I'm making it up. But yeah, he said we've won. We've won. Remember what I said the other day, that Trump was going to announce victory? Well, here he is doing it. Check this out.
Is that a great name? Well, it's only good if you win. You know, you can only do it. And we've won. Let me say, we've won. You know, you never like to say too early you won. We won. We won the bet. In the first hour, it was over. But we won. But they gave me a list of names of generals. Sir, you can pick the name you'd like, sir. I said, the name of what? The name of the attack on Iran, sir. And they gave me like 20 names. And I'm like falling asleep. I didn't like any of them. Then I see Epic Fury. I said, I like that name. I like that name.
So Trump is obviously being fed a lot of fake information by his own military. Not surprising. Or he's just choosing to selectively believe whatever makes him look good, possibly. But he hasn't won the war because the Strait of Hormuz is not yet open and the Iranian government has not been toppled. And in fact, what's really happening is that Iran has just said that, quote, Tehran's policy of reciprocal strikes has ended. From now on, continuous strikes will be carried out. And, right, so it's going to continue to strike Israel every single day. And let's see, what else? Ali Larijani, head of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, said, tonight, we received messages from U.S. President Donald Trump through the Omani mediator asking us to negotiate a ceasefire. Our response is that we will not accept any negotiations as long as an entity called Israel exists. Understand? So Iran is saying that we will continue to fight until we destroy Israel. Now, Israel's defense minister, named Katz, has announced that the military campaign against Iran will continue indefinitely to achieve the objectives of Israel, which is the destruction of Iran, and to support the Iranian citizens who want to overthrow the government regime there in Iran. So we have Iran saying, we won't stop bombing Israel until Israel is destroyed. And we have Israel saying, we won't stop bombing Iran until Iran is overthrown or destroyed. And we have Trump saying, we've already won. And then we have Lindsey Graham saying, we're out of bombs. And I don't know if you haven't seen that clip, let me play that for you here, just so you can hear Lindsey Graham. This is the drunk Lindsey Graham, which is becoming the most common Lindsey Graham. saying that we're out of bombs, and he loves the fact that we're killing all the right people, he says. So check this out.
So I just want to say I feel good about the Republican Party. I feel good about where we're going as a nation. We're killing all the right people, and we're cutting your taxes. Trump is my favorite president. We've run out of bombs. We didn't run out of bombs in World War II.
You got it? Paying attention? All right. Now, on top of that, Iran says that it's going to start targeting U.S. Technology infrastructure companies. Well, that is their facilities across the Middle East. They've said they're going to start targeting data centers for Microsoft, Palantir, Google, Oracle, NVIDIA, and IBM. They already hit an Amazon AWS data center, of course. So I guess Amazon's on the list as well. But Iran is going after big tech. And these tech companies are fleeing the region now, out of necessity, and scrambling to try to relocate their data centers to other places that are out of the reach of Iran's drones and missiles. Which is a difficult thing to do because Iran has missiles that can go quite far. Obviously, they can reach all the way to Israel. So, on top of all of that, Iran says that it has a right to nuclear weapons, that it's essentially a God-given right, and it's actually kind of hard to argue with that. What gave the U.S. the right to have nuclear weapons? Right? Well, that it was a self-asserted right. It wasn't granted by the UN or anybody else. It was just, oh, we have the right to have weapons. We're just going to build them. So the new Khamenei, the son of the one who was just assassinated, he is canceling all international agreements that require halting of the nuclear program. And he is stating that the possession of nuclear weapons is a sovereign right for Iran, and it is not subject to negotiation. So think about this. The U.S. and Israel murdered this guy's father. His father was the one who said no nuclear weapons. He issued a fatwa, or a couple of fatwas, saying no nuclear weapons because it is at odds with the teachings of Islam. Well, they are paying a price for not pursuing nuclear weapons. Obviously, they're being bombed and people are being killed. And frankly, in this world, because you know, the American Empire is a terror state, and Israel is obviously a genocidal terror state. The only way to defend yourself is to have nuclear weapons. Not to use them, but to have them. To be able to credibly demonstrate to the world that you could use them, if you wanted to. And then you'll be left alone. You notice the U.S. isn't attacking North Korea, for example. Because they've got nukes. So Iran is now on the path to have nuclear weapons. And as I've said before, and in previous interviews and podcasts, it's pretty clear that Iran has the capability. They probably already have nuclear weapons. They just need to assemble them or put them on the top of missiles or what have you. And they will have nuclear weapons, I presume, within a matter of a few weeks or months. And they could also just get nuclear weapon assistance from Russia or maybe China or maybe Pakistan for that matter. Who knows? But it's pretty clear that by killing the Ayatollah Khamenei, Israel and the United States have now, in essence, put Iran on a path where it will pursue nuclear weapons very aggressively and, I imagine, successfully. It won't be long. And at that point, Iran will demonstrate a nuclear weapon for the whole world to see, and it will say, hey, we are now a nuclear nation, and if you continue to mess with us, you know, you're gonna get nuked. And so that would change everything. That would change the world, because the West would no longer be able to continue to threaten and try to conquer Iran. The U.S. Navy would flee the area. The U.S. military bases would flee the area, which probably is also already underway. And Israel would probably cease to exist if they started something with Iran, because they would get nuked in return. Israel would. And it only takes one nuke to obliterate all of Israel. So at that point, there would have to be a multipolar peace arrangement agreed upon based on mutually assured destruction, MAD, which actually is a stabilizing concept. It's like, hey, I don't want you to nuke me, but you don't want me to nuke you. So let's get along in other ways that don't involve trading nukes. But it takes Iran having nuclear weapons in order to achieve that parity. Iran having nuclear weapons would be a great stabilizing force in the region, and we could return to commerce and shipping and energy extraction and shipments, which would stabilize the Western world. The fact that only Israel and the United States have the nuclear weapons and Iran doesn't, that is obviously very destabilizing. That's what's resulting in this current situation. So Iran gaining nukes could help calm this thing down, but it wouldn't be victory for Netanyahu or Trump. And that's why Trump and Netanyahu keep trying to completely topple Iran's government, whether or not they have nukes. They don't want them to ever be on the path of obtaining nukes, clearly. So I actually believe that, like I said here, the acquisition of nuclear weapons by Iran would halt the violence, and it would be a stabilizing force. And since I want peace and I don't want people to keep dying in the region, I hope that there is a stabilizing force, whatever it may be, because the current situation is very bad. And oil is now back over $100 a barrel. And so the oil plunge that happened yesterday or the day before was all just fiction, obviously. Things are dramatically heating up here, and Western civilization is in real trouble. And remember that almost everything Trump has said about this war has turned out to be just completely fabricated. He said, Iran's run out of missiles. They can't launch any more missiles. Well, then who keeps bombing Israel? Is it us? You know, Trump said, well, we're going to have our Navy escort ships through the Strait of Hormuz. And then the Navy commanders said, no, we're not. We're not going to commit suicide there. So Trump had to back off of that. And Trump said, we're going to keep oil prices low. We're going to release 170 million barrels or something from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Okay, well, that only covers less than a week of the normal oil flow. Less than a week. So that's not going to solve this problem for very long, obviously, at all. Iran now says it's switching from reciprocal hits, that is, you know, you attack us and we attack you back, to, quote, continuous strikes. So Iran is going to continue to just bomb Israel every day for maybe months to come. And Iran says they're going to drive the price of oil to $200 a barrel, which would, of course, completely wreck the economies of Western nations and probably would trigger a debt collapse. The whole Ponzi scheme system depends on cheap oil. Iran says that the United States won't be able to continue to suppress oil prices. That, quote, we won't allow even one liter of oil to reach the U.S., Israel, or its partners. That's from an Iranian spokesperson. And he says that any vessel or tanker that is headed for those countries will be considered a legitimate target. And no question, oil is going to, I mean, it's already over $100 a barrel. It's going to go to $150. It could go to $200 if this continues. And again, Iran holds all the cards, not Trump and not Israel. Israel is just about out of anti-air defense systems. The U.S. Navy probably is almost out of anti-air defense systems. Now, granted, the Navy and the Air Force can continue to drop heavy bombs on Iran, but you can't bomb a country into submission, it turns out. You can destroy a lot of buildings, and you can fly a lot of sorties, and you can have a lot of impressive statistics. Oh, yeah, we flew 900, you know, bombing runs, and we blew up 1,000 buildings, and blah, blah, blah. You know, 77 hospitals and 24 schools, because that's what the U.S. is targeting now. You still can't open the Strait of Hormuz by doing that. You still can't do it, which means oil is going to continue to climb. So that's where we are. So I suppose that where this is going is we're just going to be lied to constantly by the White House and Carolyn Leavitt and Donald Trump and Lindsey Graham. We're going to be told everything's great, that we've won. And yet Iran is going to continue to bomb Israel. And, you know, probably we'll get hit with false flags here in the United States to try to convince us to support a ground invasion. I've done a special report on that very topic. And things are just going to get worse from here, not better, because Trump is not willing to sit down and actually have a real negotiation with Iran that doesn't involve bombing their negotiators or bombing their country in the middle of negotiations. You see, the United States, through Jared Kushner and Steve Witkoff, has burned every bridge of possible negotiation. The U.S. has demonstrated that it is not a good faith negotiator, because twice now, the U.S. has tried to, or claimed it was negotiating with Iran, and then it bombed Iran. Last summer, it bombed and killed the negotiators. And then more recently, it bombed the country in the middle of negotiations that were showing progress. It just shows that when the U.S. negotiates with you, it's not legit. It's not a real negotiation. It's just a ruse. So in what way? See, this is why Iran is saying we will not negotiate with the United States any longer, because we've tried that and it never works. You can't blame them at this point. Again, Trump and his Mossad agents, Witkoff, etc., have burned those bridges. So there's really no negotiated off-ramp to this. I mean, not in the current context anyway, unless something dramatically changes. So there's a very high risk that this goes nuclear, that probably Israel would be the first country to start using nukes. Some people think they've already started using nukes. I'm not sure about that, but there have been some massive explosions that we've seen on video, although it's always hard to tell what's real in terms of just viewing explosions. But there's a very strong chance that this thing goes nuclear. And when it does, then I think Russia gets involved, and I think China gets involved in many ways. Economic warfare, trade warfare, and also possibly Oreshnik missiles, nuclear weapons, Iskanders. Who knows? It's going to get ugly. Because Trump is too stupid to know that he's already lost. He's too arrogant to know. And Israel is too insane to ever back down. Because Israel just cannot have peace with its neighbors. That's not consistent with its mission of greater Israel, which is, requires the mass killing and pillaging and stealing of all the land of its neighbors. So, as you can see, this epic civilizational clash cannot be resolved by the two parties agreeing to sit down and coexist. That's probably not how this ends. It either ends with the destruction of Israel or the destruction of Iran, and probably the destruction of the United States as a second order effect of all of this, or at least the toppling of the currency and the current government, etc. And it could end in the end of the world as we know it. Let's hope it doesn't go that far. But I'll just add, the way Israel has been behaving obviously is incompatible with human civilization. So nobody in the world is safe as long as Zionists continue to run that country and try to expand, their greater Israel project, which is, it's invading and murdering and killing people. It's genocide. It's ethnic cleansing. That's not compatible with human civilization, and that needs to be stopped. And as far as I can tell, Iran is the only country actually doing anything to stop it. So if you want to eliminate evil in this world and get to peace and stability and affordable energy, then you want to root for those who are on the side of truth and peace and trade, and not provoking attacks, not invading, not committing genocide. You want to root for those who negotiate in good faith and who are genuinely wanting to coexist. And that is not Israel. That's very clear. And it's obviously very questionable about where the United States falls on that spectrum as well at the moment. But things can change pretty dramatically. So let's pray for positive change. Let's demand positive change. Let's demand peace. Trump needs to basically, he needs to disconnect the United States from Israel completely, in my view, and tell Israel, you know what, we're done fighting your wars. If you want to fight all your neighbors, it's up to you now. We're done. He needs to bring U.S. troops back home, and he needs to focus on what he promised in his campaign, make America great again, not fight foreign wars and bleed and die for Israel. And until Trump does that, he will always be seen as a traitor to his own base, the MAGA base, which is the way he is viewed right now, obviously. So pray for peace. In the meantime, prepare for a difficult year ahead or multiple years. Be sure to grow your own food, you know, stockpile fertilizer for your garden. Be sure to have your water filters and your storable food. You can get some from us, healthrangerstore.com/survival, if you want to check out what we have available. And you can follow all my videos at brightvideos.com. So join me in praying for peace and calling for peace. And also the halting, the stopping, the dismantling of evil and the evil Epstein pedophile empires that have dominated our planet for far too long. They need to be stopped. So thank you for listening. Take care.
Portions of the pensions will go belly up. Portions of the 401ks will go belly up. You've got so many pressures that are out there. Consumer purchasing power is slowing. Home loans are defaulting. Student loans are defaulting. These are all pressures. All of those things that I just mentioned are actually connected as well into pensions because they become derivatives. They wind this stuff up into packages and sell this garbage off, and it's cratering.
Welcome to today's interview here on brightvideos.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we are joined by Mitch Vexler, who has, it's just an extraordinary individual with great courage, who's been sounding the alarm on a number of topics, including how your property tax dollar amounts are actually rigged and your property taxes are in essence stolen by various jurisdictions across the United States. It's a giant scam to take your money. But also we're going to talk about the interaction between the commercial lending market, bonds, commercial banks, and much more. So welcome Mitch Vexler from Mockingbird Properties. Let me give out your website. It's mockingbirdproperties.com/DCAD, which is, we'll talk about that coming up, but welcome Mitch. It's great to have you back on the show today.
Thank you very much for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to further explain this to mom and pop across the United States, Canada, and believe it or not, as far away as New Zealand.
Well, give us the big picture perspective of how deep is the trouble that's brewing right now for our financial world.
The property tax situation, be it the overvaluation and the overtaxation created at the central appraisal districts on behalf of the school districts, we've tabulated it out at roughly $5.1 trillion. The problem is that's not the real number. And the reason it's not the real number is because under the Sarbanes-Oxley requirements, banks that are holding roughly 60% of their funds in cash are required to have that money in bonds. Part of that bonds are municipal bonds, but it gets much worse when you understand what that means. So 60 million Americans actively participate in 401ks. Roughly 21 million Americans are covered by state and local government pensions. So you've got 401ks and pensions that are holding these school district bonds. And roughly one third of the adults receive income from various pension plans. But these pension plans are not going to perform because the bonds under the hood are not going to perform. So if you realize the expenses that the median household income has, and that the money does not exist today or tomorrow morning to cover off the interest on those school district bonds, never mind paying them down, then you must ask, okay, if the median household income doesn't exist, exactly what is the value of the bonds required to pay them down? And the answer would be somewhere between 13 and 30 cents on the dollar.
Well,
meaning at a minimum, you're looking at a 70% haircut if one was to keep those bonds in force. The position that I'm taking is the bonds aren't worth toilet paper, and the entire system needs to collapse because the school districts have created a fraud on such a biblical proportion that it simply cannot be paid off. See, you have fraud on one hand, then you have interest to cover the fraud. The median household income does not exist to cover the interest, to pay down the interest, never mind pay down the fraud. You've got compound cumulative interest on top of compound cumulative fraud. And so, to that point, go ahead.
Well, I'm sorry, but the practical upshot of this is, according to what you're saying, that many retirees who are relying on pension payouts in order to meet their basic costs of living, which are also rising because of inflationary pressures, those people are going to be destitute because at some point they're going to be cut off or offered a settlement, as you said, what was it, 13 to 30 cents on the dollar? Or will these pension funds just go belly up and disappear?
Portions of the pensions will go belly up. Portions of the 401ks will go belly up. If they say, well, it's part of a portfolio, so that portion of the portfolio decreases, that statement would be true. However, there are other pressures, such as car loans that are now defaulting. You've got so many pressures that are out there. Consumer purchasing power is slowing. Home loans are defaulting. Student loans are defaulting. These are all pressures. All of those things that I just mentioned are actually connected as well into pensions because they become derivatives. They wind this stuff up into packages and sell this garbage off, and it's cratering. So isn't it interesting that just yesterday, BlackRock, of all things, came out and said, yeah, we're not going to allow cash redemptions.
Well, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, that's following Blackstone a week ago. We're not going to allow cash redemptions.
And so if you can't redeem your shares in those funds, then so now, I mean, basically we have a liquidity crisis that's beginning. It's accelerating. Or how would you describe it?
It's 100% liquidity crisis, except this is going to be so much worse than 2008, because the rule of 72, and we've tracked this at least back to the year 2000. That's when I believe the interest jumped the principal. And under the rule of 72, that interest has been compounding to the tune of every seven to 10 years, double up. The problem is that's just on its original weight. They've continued to add bonds to this problem nonstop. Salina, Texas just raised $2.5 billion in bonds, the equivalent of $257,000 per house. This money doesn't exist to pay this off. This is sheer insanity. So as part of the suit, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead and complete that thought.
As part of the suit, what I've been pounding the table on is that you, the state, and the attorney general, even though the attorney general is complicit in aiding and abetting because he didn't do what was required under the Texas Education Agency as the sole signatory to ensure that there was money available to pay for these bonds. Nonetheless, a criminal complaint was filed. As a result of that criminal complaint being filed, he opened up a 1,000 district investigation here in Texas on December 7th to determine the level of the overvaluation. Well, with all that said, that proves that even the attorney general is in a box. That proves why we are at the Supreme Court right now. The median household income, I don't care how anybody tries to slice this, across the United States, does not exist to pay for these debts, period, end of paragraph.
Let me share something that happened to me locally here in Texas with the taxing authorities. We got a tax bill on a piece of property that the tax bill was something like $87,000. And it was, whoa, that's crazy. So we went to protest it at the tax office, and they immediately said, oh yeah, that's a decimal point error on our part. The taxes should actually be $8,700. So we'll correct that for you. Now, I'm wondering, how often do these taxing authorities just add another zero to everything and send them all out and hope that companies or people pay these insane numbers? I mean, is that part of what you're seeing? I know that's like very simple, basic level fraud, right? But I experienced that myself. I saw it with my own eyes. And I noticed the decimal point never moves the other way, that you never get a bill for $870. You know what I mean?
This problem is so off the charts. It is not an exaggeration to state that these CADs that meet with the central appraisal districts to examine a predetermined budget, the only reason they're meeting to determine the predetermined budget is because they're cooking the books. Yeah. None of this is real. These people are literally not doing anything that adheres to law. We've tracked all this all the way through. And it's so bad. There was a document, and I got my hands on this about 90 days ago, from the California Policy Center, examining in 2015, after a 14-year study, they called the bonds then toxic. Well, what was so interesting about that document is inside that document, they talked about election fraud with regard to raising the bonds. So it's not just the face value when the CADs are saying, well, we're going to manipulate this, which, by the way, we have on tape from Don Spencer stating we took 60,000 properties outside of the database, manipulated it in Excel, and put it back. Well, where I'm going with this, the California Policy Center found that problem. DCAD, we have that problem on audio. We have depositions from DCAD. Don Spencer falsified the tax rolls. We have that. That's been filed with the state comptroller and the attorney general. All of this, by the way, has been filed with the DOJ, the SEC, and the FBI. But isn't it interesting that in 2015, the California Policy Center outlined these exact same things that were happening then? Well, lo and behold, a week ago, on a report that I've been waiting several months to get my hands on from Johnson Central Appraisal District, was what I would call an audit light. And it wasn't a real financial audit. It was an audit of the problems. Well, on page 4 of that document, verbatim, was the exact same thing that A, we discovered at Denton Central Appraisal District, B, what the California Policy Center themselves had outlined in a 356-page document. We have the irrefutable proof of the pattern and practice to defraud, not just in Texas, not just in the United States, but in other countries that claim to be using uniform standards of professional appraisal practice. The truth of the matter is they're not. When they have this word workarounds, well, we have a workaround for this. That means that they manipulate the data to whatever determined amount they want to manipulate it to. The software that's being used by these CADs is designed to allow them to commit fraud. It's irrefutable. I mean, there's no defense for any of this.
So as you're describing it, what's being constructed is a financial house of cards that is not sustainable. And when it topples, many, many millions of people are going to be hurt just in America alone. And I'd love your response to the idea that a trigger may have just occurred, which is this war in the Middle East, which of course has wrecked much of the energy infrastructure that will have long-term implications for, you know, many industries. Including agriculture, you know, fertilizer production depends on natural gas and sulfur, et cetera. But energy scarcity could cause the beginning of a lot of defaults of certain companies and manufacturers in different countries, which could bleed into banks and so on. What's your assessment of how much of a sort of cascading domino effect impact that this current crisis could have on the financial situation you're describing?
Let's go down the road for a second of leveraged derivatives. So coincidentally, one of the people that I work closely with is in the process of putting a very large fund together to take advantage of these type of situations. And he wrote a document, a couple pages, but it traces through what would happen if 25% of the world's flow of oil was delayed and or stopped. And the cascading effect due to the leveraged derivatives themselves would be enough to knock the globe off of its kilter, meaning the catastrophe that would follow, because everything is connected to oil. And even the median household income, you'd say, well, how's that possible? Well, because people have jobs and those jobs are dependent on oil. If you manufacture packaging, well, packaging is dependent on oil. Heating is dependent on oil. I mean, other than coal and that kind of thing. But all these things globally are dependent upon one another.
And the power grid depends on natural gas in large part.
Yeah, but you have the same problem, right? So you look at these data centers, put the, whether it's nonsense or not, put it to the side, but look at the data centers. They need diesel powered generators. Where are the parts made? China. How do the parts get here? Oil.
Right.
All of these things are connected. So when you start to understand the waterfall effect, now BlackRock is using it as an excuse saying, well, okay, this is what happened, so we're not going to allow redemptions, but they never explained it. They just simply said, we're not going to allow redemptions. Well, when you understand the math under the hood, it's what I call cap rate compression. So if you look at real estate, multifamily as an example, right now today, there are people, developers, that are using other people's money to go and build multifamily on a 5 cap. That's a 5% rate of return, all cash. When you look at the private equity, what's private equity been doing? Well, they've been buying other private equity. What's the rate of return? About 6%, all cash. The cap rate compression globally is so great now that everybody's chasing yield, because no matter how you look at it, the deficit that the Federal Reserve has created at roughly $1.8 trillion in 2025, well, that requires money to be printed to pay for that deficit. The deficit never went away. You have that exact same rail happening at the school districts and the central appraisal districts. The printing machine for the school districts is mom and pop. Their house is the asset. That's the security for the fraud that they have committed on the bonds. It is the exact same rail. One is occurring at a state level. The other is occurring at a federal level. Either way, this debt isn't going to get paid off. It's going to blow up unless serious people get together, i.e. the state of Texas, go and meet with the Federal Reserve. I mean, I have solutions, I have possible ideas and a hybrid, but that's just me talking with myself. That's useless.
Yeah, nobody seems to be interested in solutions. They just want to pretend that everything's fine. And speaking of pretending, I noticed that the Trump administration appears to be pretending that the war with Iran is just about over. And yet, you and I both know that Iran has said it's not over and the Strait of Hormuz will not be open to commercial vessels. And that is, according to my research, about 20 million barrels per day of oil is now offline, which I think that's roughly around 20 to 25% of global supply. That and also, I think the UAE and also Qatar, you know, they shut operations. They're just not producing anymore. And for some of the Gulf Arab states, there's no more place to put the oil. You know, the oil storage is maxed out because there's no ships taking it away. So if we've lost, let's say, 25% of global oil production, even though in the U.S. we may domestically have more oil than most countries, and Russia, of course, has plenty of oil, this is going to hit Europe very hard, very hard. And that's going to cascade from London to New York, isn't it? I mean, we're not isolated. We don't live on islands anymore. Talk to us about that.
The private equity funds, interestingly enough, are cross-collateralized with the shadow banks. The shadow banks get their money from the big banks. Well, they're all cross-collateralized. They're all in bed with each other, and they're all out there doing derivative nonsense, which I'm not even sure the Federal Reserve has the ability to track what's going on. It would be quite a lifting chore. The point of the matter is, it only takes one domino to fall and the entire thing comes down. And the biggest red flag that everybody's got right now, in fact, is BlackRock with $14 trillion. Now, does BlackRock really care about their assets under management? Yes, because they get a fee. Do they really care about the profit? No, because they get a fee. 2% of assets under management, $14 trillion, not a bad day at the office. The point of the matter is that it's the leverage, it's the compounding of the leverage, and it's the derivatives on the leverage that simply can't be paid off. There's no math to do it. And that's why when you look at BlackRock saying, yeah, we're not going to allow any redemptions, and then you look at the auto loans, be it the fraud on Tricolor, et cetera, but even Stellantis has what's called SFS, Stellantis Financial Services, and it exists to sell cars to subprime borrowers. Well, we've heard of this word subprime in 2008, and it didn't end well. Right back to your word, liquidity crisis. Well, that's what's going to happen, except this time around, the magnitude is simply so much greater. The income didn't ever went up to even participate in paying down these debts or the interest on these debts.
Well, I guess everything you say makes sense, but my question, I'd like to redirect it, is will this energy crisis, in your view, will this accelerate the unraveling of the derivatives market, or is that not really a factor? That, and I guess the bigger question is, you know, how long can this go on in your view? Because many of us have thought that this system would not make it this far, and it's somehow it's still limping along. What do you think?
All of these elements that we're speaking of are interconnected. Nobody knows which one it will be that takes down the entire operation, but let's put that under the heading of crisis of confidence. The second the bond market and the participants in the bond market believe they're not going to get their money back or a portion, be it the interest, back, that's when this crisis of confidence kicks in. Now, you can say that it's due to oil. You can say that it's due to stretch margins. You can say all sorts of things. But the truth of the matter is it's already started. Because BlackRock, that's the kiss of death. Well, we're not going to allow participants to take their money back. And it comes down to what is it that you think you own in your bank account? What is it that you think you own when you're holding a hard wallet in crypto? None of these things are real, right? The bank account, they now have a bail-in. If a bank goes down, a large bank, that bank has the right to seize your cash and hand you back a share in its bankrupt bank. Crypto is nothing more than a speculative instrument. It's not backed. And by the way, I'm perfectly fine with the math. The math is good when you look at these ledgers and how this works. I've studied it. It's not the math. It's the fact that the government now has their hands into things like Bitcoin, which was never the purpose of Bitcoin. Bitcoin was designed to be decentralized. The second a government has it, by definition, it's now centralized. Next issue is that the government has the right to seize any coin they want. Right now, today, without a warrant, what is it that you own? See, and that's the same problem when you look at exactly what happened the other day, coincidentally, when oil ran up. So Sunday night at the open, oil skyrockets 20%. Can you imagine the damage to those who were participating in the options that had no protection when the volatility and the gamma spike? Three standard deviations. Yeah. If you're on the wrong side of that, you're down 400 or 500%. So you may only have a small amount of options, but look at what you've got to pay to get out of the trade. Mm-hmm. That's the problems with the derivatives if you don't understand what you're doing. And all these things are tied. You had the exact same thing with JP Morgan on the silver a month ago. The story is that JP Morgan themselves was on the wrong side of the trade for 45 days. That begs the question, where the hell was their credit risk department? It's insane that they would let it run. But nonetheless, the price runs up. And then in order to balance the books, miraculously, the price drops down. 10 bars, two legs, sideways to down, except it all happened in one day. So when you begin to realize the extent that the money is manipulating the circumstances because of the leverage, it's the leverage and it's the creation of the interest. You add these two things together, you're going to end up in a crisis of confidence.
So this crisis of confidence, and I think that's the appropriate term here. It when people begin to really learn the lesson of counterparty risk, which I guess they're starting to learn with BlackRock right now, that you know you think you have an investment over here, and yet you can't get it back out whenever you want to. There's counterparty risk in banks or in crypto that's held by the exchanges, for example, right? Or in bonds, obviously, that's almost the definition of counterparty risk. But we live in a country where very few people even know what the rule of 72 is that you mentioned earlier. Almost nobody knows what that is. And I mean, people in finance, I suppose, do, but the average person has no clue, can't even divide, you know, by 10% or whatever. They can't even do the math. So at what point, in your view, will people begin to realize that the counterparty risk is existential to their savings or their retirement funds? You know, what is the panic point where people say, oh my God, I got to get it out of the system at any cost?
You're there now, they just don't realize it quite yet. So the average family of four in the United States is literally living off credit cards. They are roughly $20,000 income minus expenses upside down. They can't afford the real estate taxes. So on average, the real estate taxes, whether you're a renter or a homeowner, average about $7,000. And everybody would think, to your point, well, that's only 2% of the value of my property or my apartment. No, that's not the way to look at it. That's 8.6% of your effective gross income. That's the problem. The money simply doesn't exist. So what do you end up with? Well, you end up with an increase. Never mind the tens of thousands that have already lost their homes. You're going to end up with tens of thousands more that are going to lose their homes due to tax lien foreclosures. This is happening now. Your auto defaults are skyrocketing. Well, if you're going to have a job in states like Texas or California, you need a car. If you can't pay your property taxes and you can't pay the payment on a car, and even though Stellantis has an entity that finances to subprime borrowers, if the money doesn't exist and the average family is upside down, how are you going to pay for a car? How are you going to pay for the property taxes? How are you going to pay for health insurance that's skyrocketing to the tune of 300%? How are you going to pay for house insurance that's got nothing to do with the problems of the house, but the insurance company is trying to hedge what's coming?
Yeah,
these things are all connected.
And also, I suppose, how are you going to pay for any of those things when your job has just been replaced by AI? And that's the topic I want to get in. Let's get in the weeds with you on that in part two of this interview. So stand by, Mitch. This is the wrap-up of part one. Let me give out your website again. It's mockingbirdproperties.com/DCAD. That's D-C-A-D. You can get all the documents there. It's really a lot. You can see everything that's been filed. You can see the petitions. You can see the PDFs. And you can download many of the items right there. So check that out. And Mitch, please stand by. Folks, this continues in part two, which will run one day after part one here. And you can find part two at brightvideos.com. So thank you for watching part one. There's much more to come. We'll discuss the AI impact on jobs and the threat of implosion of the credit markets in part two. Thanks for watching today. Take care. Yes, the world is getting crazy, but here at the Health Ranger store, we're putting together a survival supply assortment for you. If you go to healthrangerstore.com/survival, you'll see what we put together for you, including iodine and iosat. That's a specific brand name of potassium iodide that's FDA approved. Or we have the nascent iodine here, which is less expensive in terms of the iodine that you get. These are available in case things go nuclear. It's clear that you will not be able to find any of this for sale anywhere. All the inventories will be wiped out, like what happened after Fukushima in 2011. So if you want to get your hands on some iodine, this is a chance to get it right now. healthrangerstore.com/survival. In addition, we have many other survival items for you here, including some silver solutions, some spirulina available in bulk and at a discount. And then a large assortment of storable organic food that's laboratory tested, including our Ranger Bucket sets. Here's a 195-day supply. We've got the mini buckets, and we've also got number 10 cans available of freeze-dried fruits and vegetables and other things like miso soup powder. Here's some of the buckets. There's a big variety available. Here are some of the number 10 cans right here. Remember, a lot of people are missing fruit. They don't have enough vitamin C in their storable food. So, you know, getting bananas and pineapples and strawberries, especially, again, certified organic, freeze-dried. That is the highest quality with the highest nutrient preservation that you can get in any kind of a storable food format. All of this is available right now and so much more. Just go to healthrangerstore.com/survival. And because the freeze-dried foods last for so long, you know, even if you don't eat them this year or next year, just keep them on the shelf. They're going to last a very long time with good preservation, a long shelf life, and they will have value no matter what happens in the world. Now, of course, I'm praying for peace. I'm praying for de-escalation. I don't want to see World War III break out, and I certainly don't want it to go nuclear. But we're dealing with insane times and insane leaders and insane situations. Who knows what could happen tomorrow or next week? Disruptions could happen here in the United States. There could be, you know, domestic attacks that disrupt supply chains here in the U.S. So stock up early, stock up now, get your emergency food, emergency medicine, iodine, anything else that you think that you might need. Get it now. And by doing so, by shopping with us, you'll be supporting our platforms and our AI engines that we offer for free. That's funded in part by sales from our store. So shop with us at healthrangerstore.com/survival and help yourself get prepared and also help us bring you more free tools and platforms that can keep you informed no matter what happens in the world. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Thank you for your support. God bless you all. Take care.